Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. I'm Judge Theodora Gaitis, and I am joined today by my colleagues, Judge Jean Cochran and Judge Jeffrey Bryan. We today are appearing via the Zoom platform. We have six cases on our calendar, and this is the second case scheduled for oral argument this morning. The case is A22-0047. And the case title is Jacqueline and Johanning Probst versus Thomas Raymond Probst, appellant. Counsel, I just want to give you a few advisories before you begin with your arguments. The appellant shall have 15 minutes this morning, and the respondent shall get 15 minutes. Appellant will get a 5-minute rebuttal. We do have a clock that will be counting down your time, and that clock should be visible to you on the screen right now. Can you both see it? You can just nod if you can. Okay, good. So that clock will keep track of your time. Arguments this morning are being recorded. We're making an audio recording that will be available on our website shortly. And in the interest of that audio recording, I ask that you please mute yourself if you are not the attorney who is speaking. Additionally, before you begin your argument, please identify yourself and the party you are representing. That ends my comments. We are now ready to hear from you both. We will begin with counsel for appellant, Mr. Wedingling. You may proceed.
Thank you, Judge. May it please the court and counsel. Good morning, Jean. My name is Bill Wettering, and I'm here on behalf of Tom Probst in this appeal from a district court order, post-dissolution order, in Nobles County. And I just want to begin by saying both parties were represented by counsel in this dissolution, the same counsel that are here before you now. And we negotiated a resolution of the matter and entered stipulated findings to the court at the time. And it was before now Justice Gordon Moore at the time here in Worthington. And so everything was stipulated too. And part of that stipulation that we're here before the court on now is this division of the retirement account of my client, Mr. Probst. And I would just indicate, obviously I rely upon the pleadings that we've submitted to the court. I think it's fairly clear. I think we're here de novo from what I see in the cases on this issue involving retirement accounts and qualified domestic relations orders. And when the law basically is that when you have a sum certain on a division of a account rather than a percentage of an account or something like that, that's what you do. You aren't able to go back in later on and change it or something like that. It's calculable at the time. It's agreed upon with the assistance of counsel. The QDRO was entered by the court back in 2016 in July, and it was after being agreed upon by the parties. And frankly, we sent that up to the plan administrator, and apparently what happened here is that the alternate payee never contacted the plan administrator to set up an account. And obviously a lot of time went by, basically 5 years went by, and then the alternate payee contacted the administrator to set up that account. And so that's all fine. But then the alternate payee is saying, well, the account made, I would have had this in my own account and I would have made money on it. And therefore, I should have some adjustment to that. And so we disagreed that it is a some certain QDRO. And so it went before the court here on a motion to amend it. And so, first of all, you know, we objected that, you know, there's been no appeal from this. There's been no further action on it. It shouldn't be heard by the court at all, but it was heard by the court. And our argument then is the same as our argument today, is that where there's a sum certain in a quadro, that's the sum you get. Now,
counsel,
go ahead.
As I understand your argument, you're arguing the district court erred in modifying the terms of the stipulated agreement and the quadro order based on paragraph 4 in the addendum having to do with property division. Is that correct?
I believe so.
The language that says, as further property settlement, petitioner shall receive a transfer of $30,000 from respondent's retirement account through the use of the quadro, said sum to be computed as of May 25th, 2016.
Yes.
And it's your view that that language means that respondent gets only the amount and no gains after May 25th, 2016, correct?
It's correct.
But would you agree that because this is a stipulated decree, the district court should have interpreted the decree using rules of contract interpretation? It's basically a contract.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. I'll turn you up here a little. Sorry, Judge.
So basically, I'm wondering, would you agree that how this language is to be implemented is basically a question of contract interpretation because it's a stipulated decree?
Yes, I would. I suppose it is. I mean, we agreed to what this was. The May 25th, 2016 was the date of valuation that we were using to determine the amount to be split. So we had agreed.
Help me understand that. Why was there a date of valuation if it was a fixed amount? Does that language said sum to be computed as of May 25th, 2016 create an ambiguity?
I don't know, other than the date of valuation, I don't know why it's in there. Because I think when we were doing the workout between Mr. Mailander and myself, that I think was the date that we were using on the value of all the properties. And that's how we came down to, that's it. I think that's the only reason it's in there.
Okay, so that's the date you were using for all of the properties. That's what I heard.
Yeah, I believe so. And I think the idea then from these cases, I mean, I've heard of some very alarming situations in these, depending on when you have a volatile market or all of a sudden you have a volatile market, maybe after the time that you entered into these agreements, where people, you know, all of a sudden the value of the account drops by 20%, you're still stuck owing that $30,000. And if it goes up, you know, that's to your benefit. And the quadro itself actually says that there's no participation in gains or losses. Either way, Mr. Probst owed the $30,000. So, I think when you do that, then that's what it is. and that's what it needs to stay. And had the alternate payee set up her account and done what she was supposed to do, then it would have been transferred at that time. I frankly was unaware that this had not occurred. And my client himself was unaware that it had not occurred. We all were under the mistaken impression, at least on from my end, that the order was entered. We sent it up to them, sent it up to the administrator, and apparently that alternate account never got created by...
Mr. Wetterling, I'm going to jump in real quick because I wonder if your argument would change if, let's say, it wasn't a result of the alternate payee not getting an account set up. Let's say it was 100% the result, the fault, if you will, of your client. Does that change the argument that it's $30,000 and that's it? You don't get interest on that $30,000, even if it's the fault of the husband in this case.
I don't know. I don't see how it can be, but you're proposing a hypothetical. I think there's plenty of arguments for a different type of relief, but that's not what the law is. And I think that's where I'm hung up on it. When this came up, we did the research on it. What's the law? The law is if it's a sum certain, it's a sum certain. And if the market goes up, the market goes down, there's some delay due to whoever's fault, that's really not supposed to be a consideration as I understand it.
I don't think the argument is that because the account had gains, therefore $30,000 is no longer fair. It seems to be the argument is that had that $30,000 been transferred when it was supposed to be transferred, there'd be interest that wife could have had on it. So it doesn't seem to be really about gains and losses or market volatility. So that's why I asked the question, because if it is, if it does depend on one fault or the other, it's almost akin to a sanctions or an additional part of the judgment that is due to the cost of enforcing it or the delay of enforcing it.
Well, I guess I'm somewhat confused by the question. I think the reason that the law is what it is that the courts recognize that there's going to be a delay between the time that the division is determined and the time that it actually gets transferred administratively and whatever. There's always going to be some delay. And what I've become aware of is that, say, back in 2008, when things went crazy in the markets, that a lot of people got hurt on that, both on the housing side valuation and on the market value of their situation. So a woman that, say, had a huge account and it went down in value, if they agreed on a sum certain, she still owed that sum certain to her former spouse. And the same was true with if a house went down $200,000 in value. And a lot of people got beat up on that. And I don't think the court can go back in then and say, well, you know, you agreed to this in, say, September of 2008, and now we're getting this all taken care of in October of after that date, and things have changed remarkably. You're still, that's what you agreed to, and that's what you get. And the document itself actually says that there's no adjustment for gains or losses because she's protected from the downside as well.
Well, that what you're referring to when you say the document is the DRO, not the stipulated divorce decree, correct?
Correct.
But it seems that the controlling document is the stipulated decree. And that
well, the,
And that the language QDRO talks about... The QDRO was
also agreed to.
Well, but it implements the decree, correct?
That's what it's intended to do.
Explain to me why the language said some to be computed as of May 25th, 2016 doesn't create an ambiguity in that it could be interpreted either to mean a sum, you know, that sum, or that sum plus interest because it's computed as of that date and it's for funds to be in a quadro that will be, I mean, the decree was signed in July, so that postdates the May 25th date. So it seems to me another reasonable interpretation is when it says set sum to be computed as of May 25th, is the intent is that wife gets that amount in a quadro as of that date plus any gains from that date. I mean, it takes an inference, but isn't that another reasonable alternative interpretation? Isn't there an ambiguity there?
I don't think it is. And I think the reason that it's even there is because I didn't write it. I believe, and Gene can tell you whether or not he wrote it, but I think it's lifted from a form where it contemplated a percentage, evaluation date percentage rather than a sum certain. So I think it's not germane to the actual agreement of the parties, because I think that wherever that was taken from to be inserted in here for our agreement was a boilerplate where you actually had a percentage applied rather than a sum certain. And I think it just happened to be that way. And that was the date that we were using for valuation. Then on that date.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that answer. I see your time is up, but I just would comment for you to think about on rebuttal that argument seems to rely on extrinsic evidence that wasn't before the district court at the time and that we can't consider.
Yeah, I'm not certain about that, but I do believe that's the situation, and we arrived at a sum certain, and that I believe we're compliant with my arguments, consistent with what the law is on a sum certain division. Thank you.
Thank you for your argument, Mr. Redding. You'll have the opportunity to speak again on rebuttal. We will now turn to Mr. Mailander, and Mr. Mailander, you have 15 minutes to present your argument.
Yes. Can you hear me? Okay. Yes. Your Honors and the court, I'm not going to take my full time. I think the trial judge made relatively extensive findings in the court order that we're appealing. The Judge Cochran is basically outlined my position. You have the divorce decree that the parties agreed to, and then you have a QDRO that is meant to implement that divorce decree. Mr. Wettering's reading of the divorce decree makes the date that it states that the HER fund is to be established totally irrelevant. It doesn't make any difference if she's established $30,000 on May 16, 2016 or 2020. That date is absolutely meaningless. The trial court, in her discretion, determined that wasn't correct. And she agreed that the account was to be set up as of 2016, and my client should receive the interest. I wish I had a good explanation for why we didn't do anything for 4.5 years. I don't. I don't have any record of having received the QDRO at some time in that time period I withdrew as counsel, I just don't have a good explanation for it. When it came to my attention that my clients didn't have her retirement account, I immediately contacted Bill, and then it led to the motion and to this argument. I note that the trial court found that it received a letter of argument from me approximately 10 days after the oral argument that we had in this case. And I want to make it clear, that was at the trial court's request. She gave us 10 days to submit a written letter argument, and I submitted one, and I don't think Bill submitted one. But based on all that, the trial court decided what she decided in this case. I didn't argue unjust enrichment. That was the way she had of explaining her decision. But irrespective of how she gets there, I think her decision is reasonable, and it's not abuse of discretion for this decision to stand. Thank you.
Counsel, as you noted, the district court appeared to rely on unjust enrichment to as the basis for amending the quadro order. I am not aware of any case law that would support that as a legal basis for amending the order. Can you cite us to any case law?
No, I can't, Your Honor. I agree. That might not be the proper analysis, but I think the conclusion she reaches is the correct one.
Well, would you agree that the proper analysis should be based on, should involve interpreting the stipulated decree based on contract law principles?
That's exactly correct, Your Honor.
And would you agree that there is some ambiguity in the language, given that it makes clear that $30,000 is to be transferred, but then there's this language set sum to be computed as of May 25th, 2016. And it, to me, that language is unclear. It doesn't say, $30,000 along with any gains as, after May 25th, 2016. It just says said sum to be computed as of May 25th, 2016.
I guess I agree with you. There is some ambiguity, and the trial court decided it in the respondent's favor. The appellate court, a different judge decided a different way. But I believe the trial court was within her discretion in deciding it this way.
Can you point to any language in the district court's order that suggests that the district court was actually interpreting the language in the stipulated decree to reach the result the district court reached?
I guess I can't point to any language put in the court's order on the record that this court has before it. Like I said, she cited my letter and my explanation of current issues and the situation regarding MRS, and that language might have influenced her decision, but I don't think that's part of this record.
So given that there's an ambiguity, would it make sense for this court to reverse and remand with instructions for the district court to interpret that language according to contract law principles and give the parties an opportunity to present any extrinsic evidence they may have regarding the intent?
Obviously, I prefer this court just affirm, but as an alternative, I would agree that they could remand it.
Thank you.
Mr. Mailander, I'm wondering if you have an opinion regarding the facts that the district court found, specifically as to what happened here and why
the one message I would want anyone
didn't occur as it was supposed to in 2016. Mr. Wetterling says it's because the alternate payee didn't set up a separate account. And that doesn't seem to be exactly what the district court found. So I'm curious as to your opinion and on what those facts mean for us today.
Like I said, I don't have an explanation for why it didn't get set up. It obviously didn't get set up in 2016. I am reading the court's order, and I guess I don't know that she, I told her that was, I didn't have an explanation for why it was not set up then. I don't know that she found any facts to support or not support that decision or that factual issue. I may just be missing it, but I don't see anything in the order addressing that particular issue.
And as I look at the QDRO paragraph 8, see if I can get the exact language here. It says the order assigns to the alternate payee an amount equal to $30,000 of the participant's total MNDCP account balance. Mr. Wetterling is arguing or suspects that not just this paragraph, but also the decree might be leftover boilerplate from a specific percentage. Do you agree with that as you look at how that's written, an amount equal to $30,000 of the total balance? Or if you look to the provisions of the decree, let's see, the previously awarded $30,000 portion of the investment and having that May 26, 2016 date.
If I'm going outside the record, I apologize, but to answer your question, the QDRO was prepared by Bill Wettering's assistant and sent to me and said, this is what you should use. I used it verbatim the way I got it, and that's why where we're at. The QDRO, as I pointed out in my brief, doesn't even include a date that is to be affected. And I think the date is very important. But to answer where Bill's staff got this or attorney and his staff got this, I don't know. I think they were trying to be helpful because the QDRO was Thomas Probst, not Jacqueline. And Bill and I have practiced law together many, many years. And, we would help each other out. He would send me something. But this QDRO is at odds with the stipulated settlement. And if in the final analysis, the stipulated settlement should control. I don't know if I answered your question directly or not.
I think so. Thank you.
Yeah. Anything else? Any questions? Any further argument?
None, Your Honor.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your argument, Mr. Mainlander. We will now go back to Mr. Wettering for a 5-minute rebuttal. You may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Judge. As you can tell, Mr. Mainlander and I do see each other frequently and have had a very warm professional and personal relationship. And I don't have any argument with his recollection of the matter at all, other than to say it was essentially admitted and the court should understand this, that the petitioner, the alternate payee here, did not take any steps to set up that alternate account. And that, I believe, is understood by counsel and by myself and by the court. And that if we go back, I think clearly as your panel has stated, it's unjust enrichment is not appropriate here, and it should be reversed on that grounds alone. I think it should also be just flat out reversed, but I understand if you feel there's some ambiguity there that you may choose to do something different. But this was resolved, and at least my recollection is clear on this. It was resolved by arriving at a number on the account to be transferred, not a percentage. And because it's not a one half situation. We had a home involved here. We negotiated on that. And then this was used to round it out to finish the equitable division of the marital assets. And I think counsel would agree with that. So we came to a total number. To get to that total number, it had to be 30 from this account. That's what should have been distributed. And keep in mind here now, it happens that the account went up. I'm not so sure where it's at today, but it could have gone the other way, and Mr. Probst would owe the $30,000. So, I mean, that's the risk and reward is out of it, and that was the intention when we did it. And I just want to be clear on that, and I'm quite sure counsel would agree with that. It wasn't a percentage to be determined at some later time. It was a sum certain. And I do agree that that the item does control it. We may well have put the QDRO together, and counsel may would have approved it. That's all I can say about that. Thank you.
Thank you both very much for your arguments this morning. The case is now submitted to the court, and we will